The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss like playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Eric Metaxas Show. Today's show is brought to you by the Brothers Karamazov.
Not the book, the actual brothers themselves.
They love Eric and wanted to support him, so they decided to sponsor the show.
Is that not amazing?
And Dostoevsky doesn't know a thing about it.
And he invented them.
Now your host, Eric Metaxas.
What? Hey, folks, we've got a really special program for you. Listen carefully. I don't want you to miss a syllable. Well, there may be one or two syllables in the course of the program that you can miss, but you won't know what they are. So just pay attention to everyone and you'll be safe. We're talking today with a medical doctor, Joseph Bergeron. He has written a book called The Crucifixion of Jesus. A medical doctor examines the death and resurrection of Christ. The book comes with a foreword by none other than Gary Habermas. Is that how it's pronounced?
Yes.
Habermas. I'm impressed just by the foreword. But the book, first of all, great to have you in the studio. Dr. Bergeron, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I've heard a lot about, you know, medical accounts of the crucifixion, and it's something that interests me very much. Apologetics interests me, whether we can know what happened or what we can know or what we can't know. Or what we know didn't happen. All of these things, I think a lot of people have this view that the crucifixion of Jesus and all this stuff, it happened back in mythical times and we can't really know anything. It's like talking about, you know, when Athena came out of the brow of Zeus. It's just something that you either believe or you don't or whatever. In fact, that's dramatically untrue. And your book makes that case, that we can know a lot. So first of all, being a medical doctor, what is it that got you interested specifically in this subject?
Well, the Christian Medical Student Group at Indiana University Medical School asked me to give a talk, and I knew that physicians had written about the crucifixion, but I'd never read it. So I thought, well, I'll just review that and provide it to the
students.
Now,
when was this? Years ago?
About 10 years ago.
10 years ago. Yeah, because I know that books have been written on this subject. I've not read any of them, but I've heard tidbits here and there. But so just to give the talk in Indianapolis, you refreshed yourself with this.
I read everything. I read the books, the articles. There's a body of literature written by physicians on the subject. And as I started to go through that, what perplexed me was there was not an agreement. There was no consensus about what actually was Jesus' cause of death. Now,
that's actually quite interesting, isn't it? I guess I always assumed, because you hear about Roman crucifixion, that one ultimately suffocated to death.
I hear that sermon every Easter.
Right? You hear it over and over
Easter.
And over. Okay.
Except that really is not medically logical. And I go into a great deal of discussion in the book about why it's not logical and how that couldn't have occurred and how that really came into popular discussion. Jesus died. Strictly speaking, the cause of death was crucifixion, but in medical language, when we're talking about the cause of death, what we're really talking about is the mechanism of death, what physiological processes resulted in the cessation of life.
Right.
Jesus died of traumatic hemorrhagic shock. And shock in the English language has many meanings, from the tangible sensation of electricity to being emotionally flabbergasted. But when we talk in medical language about shock, what we're talking about is impaired circulation. And with traumatic hemorrhagic shock, we're talking about diminished blood volume as a result of trauma.
Okay, so he bled, to put it in layman's terms, when you're crucified, you bleed so much that it leads to shock.
What we can say about Jesus' death, and when we look at the descriptions in the Gospels and do basically a forensic reconstruction of what happened, that's the telling point of how he died. And there may have been different mechanisms of death from victim to victim. And the Romans crucified, we don't know, hundreds of thousands, probably over six centuries of crucifixion as their most severe method of execution. But in Jesus' case, Jesus had excessive beatings. He was beaten first by the Sanhedrin and the temple guard, and then he was beaten by Roman soldiers, whose, in the book of Mark, it says a whole company beat him. So he had two scourgings, multiple beatings. And the descriptions of what a beating would be like for crucifixion is severe. Eusebius said that you could see that the scourges would cut down to the bone, or you could see the inner organs exposed from such severe beatings as what would occur before crucifixion. So the soft tissue trauma would be significant. And so in Jesus' case, Jesus died rapidly. He died in 6 hours. Crucifixion could last for days. There are literary references to crucifixions lasting up to a week. So, you know, not everybody bled to death quickly, but in Jesus' case, his beatings were excessive and his death was rapid. So that really points to an underlying process occurring that would not have been obvious to the average observer. I make the case in the book and in prior medical journal article that the components were present to cause a complication of shock that's called trauma-induced coagulopathy, meaning that when the trauma is so bad that the blood chemistry becomes deranged and it can't clot normally.
Wow, hang on a second. The blood chemistry becomes so... Did you say deranged?
The clotting mechanisms become deranged to the point.
I just have never known the term deranged to be used as a medical term that way. That's amazing to me that you're saying that the blood chemistry itself,
yes,
was messed up so that the blood could not coagulate. I've just never heard of such a thing.
Well, it's actually a fairly new diagnostic entity since I believe identified in the early 2000s. But basically, three things have to occur. There has to be tissue injury with bleeding. There has to be hypothermia, or decreased core body temperature. And there has to be acidemia of the blood, or a decreased pH of the blood. Now, that's common in shock. Jesus was crucified on a day that was cold. Peter was warming himself by the fire. He lost his inhibition to stand by guards and warm himself by a fire.
This is brilliant detective work. Seriously, this is amazing what you're saying, because it certainly never occurred to me that it was cold. What a concept that, yes, of course, Peter is warming himself by a fire. Why? You must be pretty cold, as you just implied, to go into this danger zone where people might recognize you, but you're so cold you don't care. I never have thought of that.
Well, you know, they identified him, and the girl said, you're one of his disciples. And he started cursing and said, no, I'm not, but I'm cold. I want to stand by the fire.
I mean, that's just – I've just never heard with regard to the crucifixion of Jesus, the idea that it was cold?
Well, the cold contributes to the development or the potential development of trauma-induced coagulopathy. Now, that they say occurs in about 20% of trauma cases that present to an emergency department. And it's very difficult to control. Trauma physicians will, you know, of course, try to stop bleeding. They'll replace blood products. They'll try to monitor the chemistry, warm the body, all these things. Even at that, the risk of death is a bad player. It's an ominous thing to present to the emergency room. And you can imagine 2,000 years ago, there was no treatment. And so what happens is it creates a positive feedback loop or snowball effect where the blood starts to lose its ability to clot, and it just keeps getting worse and worse and
okay,
worse.
Okay, so it's obviously going to lead to death at that point. There's no going back.
That's true.
Okay, we're going to go to a break here. Folks, I have the privilege of speaking with Dr. Joseph Bergeron, who has a new book out, The Crucifixion of Jesus, A Medical Doctor Examines the Death and Resurrection of Christ. Stick around, please.
Now playing Breakthrough, starring Chrissy Metz.
Boys, get off the ice!
He's been underwater 15 minutes.
The odds were against her son.
He's had no pulse for over an hour.
Until his mother's prayer.
Please send her Holy Spirit to save my son.
Proved the impossible.
We've got a pulse!
Now.
I don't believe John will survive the night.
Discover the incredible true story.
You don't know my son.
Of an extraordinary miracle.
He is a fighter.
Breakthrough, rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. For tickets, go to BreakthroughMovie.com.
Are you overwhelmed, unable to think clearly or sleep well at night? Or just trudging through each day, but not really enjoying your life? I'm a counselor with Faithful Counseling, and that feeling of distress can sometimes be because you're wrestling with a problem that seems too big or too impossible to overcome. Other times, people are consumed by a past hurt. I'm part of a network of Christian counselors, fellow believers, trusted therapists who share your faith. We want to give you a free week so you can try us out. You can begin a conversation with one of us by text or phone, even video conferencing today. Are you ready to shake this off and begin enjoying your life? If it's not for you, cancel during your first week and you'll not pay a dime. Go to TryFaithfulCounseling.com. It's time to talk to someone who can help. Go now to TryFaithfulCounseling.com. It's so easy to get started and your first week is free. Go now to TryFaithfulCounseling.com.
Are you a responsible person who finds yourself growing deeper in credit card debt? Then get ready for a toll-free number that will put you on a path to financial recovery. Trinity Debt Management will consolidate your accounts and work with your creditors. You'll save thousands and become debt-free for keeps. If your debt has you down, we should talk. Call Trinity at 1-800-990-6976. 1-800-990-6976. 1-800-990-6976. The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
It's probably been about 10 years ago. I had quite a few credit cards. The interest on the cards was really high. I was making the minimum payments, but barely. And it was just getting to be too much, so I called Trinity.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-990-6976 to talk to a certified counselor.
They met with me, and they were able to get all of my credit cards in one lower payment.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
They did help me learn how to manage my money. Now, you know, we have a house, and we're doing a lot better.
If your debt has you down, call Trinity at 1-800-990-6976.
My name is Holly, and I am debt-free for keeps.
1-800-990-6976.
Hey there, folks. It's Eric Metaxas here. You all know how much I love MyPillow, and now Mike Lindell has come out with the world's most comfortable bed sheets. He finally found the best cotton in the world in a region where the Sahara Desert, the Nile River, and the Mediterranean Sea all come together to create the ideal weather conditions for growing cotton. This is not a joke. His new Giza Dream bed sheets are made with this long staple cotton, and he guarantees they'll be the most comfortable sheets you'll ever own. The first night you sleep on these sheets, you will never want to sleep on anything else. The Giza Dream sheets are available in a variety of colors, and like all of Mike's products, they come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Right now, you can get your very own by calling 800-978-3057, 800-978-3057, and use promo code ERIC or METAXAS to get 30% off plus free shipping, or go to MyPillow.com, but be sure to use the code ERIC or METAXAS, MyPillow.com.
Hey there, folks. We are talking about, maybe the most important event in the history of the world, just in case you're wondering whether you should be tuning into this program or not. We're talking with a medical doctor who's here with me in the studio, Dr. Joseph Bergeron, who's written a book called The Crucifixion of Jesus, A Medical Doctor Examines the Death and Resurrection of Christ. And I want to be clear, Dr. Bergeron, what you have in this book is, in fact, groundbreaking and new.
Well, there are a lot of things in the book that are not available elsewhere.
Well, the reason I say this is there are plenty of books on the subject of Jesus died, here's a medical doctor's viewpoint. But there is stuff in your book that goes beyond what is in any of those books.
Yes, I think so. As we were talking before the break, I proposed the idea that the components were in place, the elements were present for Jesus to have suffered the complication of shock called trauma-induced coagulopathy. And that creates a snowball effect where the blood progressively loses its ability to clot, and it creates an irreversible gauntlet to death, and it's rapid. And so when you look at Jesus' death in 6 hours, as opposed to maybe days with other victims, there was something happening to him that wasn't happening to the typical crucifixion victim.
Right.
And it would not have been obvious to the casual observer, but something was happening that wasn't happening with other people.
And by the way, I can't remember who it was. Forgive me. Maybe, was it Pilate who says he's already dead? Like he's sort of shocked when he's asked for the body. Can I have the body? He says, he's already dead. He did not expect him already to be dead a few hours after he'd been crucified.
That's correct. He did not expect him to be dead. And death had to be certified before the remains could be released. The usual case was that crucifixion victims were left on the cross. Their remains were devoured by scavenging animals. That's why we have so few archaeological finds of crucifixion victims. There are only two. One in Jerusalem in the first part of the first century, and one that was just recently reported in April that was found in northern Italy, which dates to the Roman period, but they were not able to date the bones. They were in such poor condition.
I mean, that is, in fact, amazing that they crucified hundreds of thousands of victims and that we have the examples of two. Now, one of them, of course, from the time of Jesus, and the other one you mentioned in Italy. Let me ask this. The other crucifixion victims on either side of Jesus did not die very quickly. He died before they did. And because it was the Sabbath, I suppose the Jews of the day, the Pharisees, the religious leaders of the day, whoever they were, because it was the Sabbath, wanted death to occur more quickly to those on either side of Jesus. Why is that? I don't understand that.
Well, it was a festival week. It was the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which starts with a Passover day, then as the first day of that week.
But why would this crucifixion matter to the religious leaders? I'm not clear on that.
The best I can make of it is that it was a religious festival week.
And they didn't want to spoil the party by having these guys hanging around.
So they
had the Roman soldiers break their legs, which is itself one of the most gruesome things I've ever heard, so that they would die more quickly.
Well, yes. And I think there's a scene in Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ where As I remember it, a soldier takes what looks like a sledgehammer, takes a running start, and comes up and wails on the victim's legs. And I think that's exactly how it would have happened, because the crucifixion find in Jerusalem, both the legs were fractured. One of the legs had what's called a spiral fracture, would have been a high-force fracture. So I think that, that however they broke the legs, it would have been a very high-force to do that.
The level of brutality, I have to say, is unspeakable. In this day and age, we very rarely glimpse anything this horrifying. And even your description of the flagellation, the beating of Jesus before his crucifixion, there's a level of gruesomeness that you just don't ever hear of this. It's really horrific.
Well, even the Romans thought it was obscene. They called it the summa supplica, the supreme penalty. And so it was intended to be the worst possible death. And, you know, death by crucifixion, that's why there's been so much confusion about it, because there was not an obvious direct cause. It wasn't like dying from a firing squad. They would put him up on the cross and they would just be there until they expired. So, you know, it wasn't obvious. It was a long, slow death for most people.
Well, before we get into more of the details, let me just ask you, why is it that you wrote this book? In other words, was it because you found that previous accounts, I assume, were inadequate, or that there was because you had this new information? What, is it just because of the cause of death, or are there other aspects to it?
Well, I had written a medical journal article, basically a dissertation on shock, about Jesus' cause of death.
And when was that?
2012.
Okay, so 6 years ago, you wrote an article in a medical journal.
Yes, the Journal of Forensic and Legal Medicine.
It's interesting that a journal of that kind would publish something like that. I'm happy to hear that they would.
Well, it was rejected 6 times before it was accepted. medical journals are not really friendly to this kind of topic.
I'm not shocked by that, but I'm glad that the 7th time was a charm.
And then after that, I wrote a collaborative article with Gary Habermas on the hallucination hypothesis for the story of Easter.
And for my audience who doesn't know who Gary Habermas is, tell us if you would.
He's the chair of philosophy at Liberty University. He's kind of a guru on resurrection. He's written about 40 books on the resurrection of Christ.
A guru on resurrection? I can't imagine there are too many of those walking around. And he's written 40 books on it?
I believe. Last I knew.
I think I've written 2 or 3 chapters, and I'm done.
Here's the thing. Not many people read academic articles, and so I really wanted to bring this to a larger audience, to a more public venue. And in your book, Miracles, you talk about how you came to the awareness that God was calling you to write about Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And I was thinking about these 2 articles, and I thought, I really took it as God's assignment to me to write it for a public venue, and specifically for the target audience of college students, college graduates, because there's a kind of an unrecognized epidemic in our country where Christian young people who have grown up in church, grown up in youth groups, when they go to college, between 60 to 80% of them, depending on what you read, depart from the faith. And it's usually within the first year. And so I just really wanted to bring this into a public venue with that target audience and say, Christian faith is not blind. Christianity is unique. We can trace it back to historical events, and there's logic behind what we believe. And the point of the book is that the gospel accounts of Jesus' death correspond with current medical understanding.
That itself is extraordinary. I mean, that's a headline there, or it's a subheadline, because, again, I think people think of it as a mythical thing. They think, okay, he was crucified, whatever. But there are tremendous details and specifics that as time passes, and this is fascinating, that the more we know of science, the more advanced we are, the more we can know about this past and how, in fact, it's not mythical.
Well, for example, Origen, the church father, thought the description of the spear entering Jesus' chest and water and blood coming out, he thought that was a miraculous sign. He didn't, you know, and who gets that? I mean, how does that happen? But when we look at it in a modern sense, we can understand that the beatings that Jesus took to his chest could have easily caused a tissue injury and fluid to develop around the lungs, what's called the pleural effusion. And the fluid in a pleural effusion is clear unless there's trauma. So a spear entering the chest, if there was fluid present, would first look like water. And when it punctured in the heart and ruptured the heart muscle, blood would mix with it and it would look like blood. So we can reconstruct that and say, look, that's accurate. Nobody back then knew. Origen didn't know. They didn't understand. John, in his gospel, when he describes that, he's redundant about saying, I saw this, I was there, and I'm writing about this so that you'll know that.
Well, it just makes sense on so many levels, and that's what I find fascinating, is that the more we know, the more we can understand it.
Folks, just don't want to forget to let you know, there is still time. There is still time right now, today, this week, to give to CSI. We're still doing the campaign, so if you want to get all the different levels of gifts and things that we want to send you, if you want to participate in freeing people from slavery, everything, you can still do it. All you have to do is go to MetaxasTalk.com, MetaxasTalk.com. You'll see the banner at the top, MetaxasTalk.com. Don't miss the opportunity. It's still available.
Stick around. It's the Eric Metaxas Show.
Calls me, so I sing the song of love, Julia.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. The chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, New York Democrat Jerry Nadler, says he'll be issuing a subpoena for the full special counsel report and the underlying materials. A redacted version of Mueller's report has been released. A French official says investigators think an electrical short circuit most likely caused the Notre Dame Cathedral fire. Investigators still don't have the green light to work in the cathedral for safety reasons. A 37-year-old man has been arrested after entering St. Patrick's Cathedral with two cans of gasoline, lighter fluid, and butane lighters. He had also booked a flight to Italy and had also been arrested at a New Jersey cathedral a few days ago. North Korea demanding that U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo be removed from high-stakes negotiations over its nuclear program. The North has also test-fired what it described as a new type of tactical guided weapon. This is SRN News.
Following is a true story.
My name is David Bryant. When I was 37, my wife and I decided to get term life insurance through SelectQuote. Just 3 years later, I was diagnosed with ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. Because of life insurance, the people I love most in this world will be protected no matter what happens to me. I know that the dreams I have for my family can still come true. Financial security, to stay in the home we became a family in, and for our children to be able to go to college. I reached out to SelectQuote because I wanted to share my story. If just one person purchases life insurance, I know I will have made a difference.
SelectQuote can find a 37-year-old male a $500,000 policy for under a dollar a day.
If there are people you care about, you need life insurance. It may be the single most important financial decision of your life.
Don't put off protecting your family. Get your free quote now. Call 800-6 671-7070. That's 800-671-7070. 800-671-7070. Or go to SelectQuote.com. This is a paid endorsement. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Not available in all states.
The backyard's looking great, Rob.
Thanks, man. I was planning on adding a deck, too. Know any good contractors?
Why don't you just ask HomeAdvisor?
Home what?
HomeAdvisor.com. You just tell them about your project and they match you with local pros that can do the job.
Nice. Now, how much does it cost?
Oh, HomeAdvisor's totally free to use. Plus, you can read customer reviews, check pricing, and book appointments for free.
What's the website again?
HomeAdvisor.com. Or just download the free HomeAdvisor app. HomeAdvisor.
Are you an unhappy timeshare owner? Getting out of your timeshare is probably at the top of your to-do list. Hi, I'm Karen, owner of Lone Star Transfer. Now that the annual maintenance fees are coming due, you probably wish you had a way to get out of that burdensome and expensive timeshare. Thankfully, we can help. Our process is done legally, ethically, and quickly. Call today for a no-obligation consultation at 833-594-0077 or visit us online at LoneStarTransfer.com.
Early morning yesterday.
up before the dawn. And I really have enjoyed my stay, but I must be moving on. Like a king without a castle, like a queen without a throne, I'm a dirty morning lover, and I must
be. Hey there, folks. We're talking about the crucifixion of Jesus, and the book is called The Crucifixion of Jesus, A Medical Doctor Examines the Death and Resurrection of Christ, Dr. Bergeron. This is very fascinating. So you felt particularly called to write this because you did believe that there is not a full accounting of this. In other words, you discovered a number of things that hadn't been in previous books. What is the most recent book before this that goes into this in detail?
The two books that are by physicians that are well known is Pierre Barbet's book. He was a French surgeon. He wrote A Doctor at Calvary, I believe, circa 1950. The most recent one is Fred Zugabee's book, The Crucifixion of Jesus, A Forensic Inquiry. And so those are the two.
When did that come out?
2005.
Okay. So what is in this book that we wouldn't have picked up from those previous accounts?
Well,
first you mentioned the cause of death, of course. That's number one.
Yes, well, Pierre Barbet's book is very well done in many respects, and it's a classic. But he's the person that largely popularized the suffocation idea for Jesus' cause of death. And it was based on what he had he was aware of a suspension suspension trauma that was used to torture people during the Austro-Hungarian War and at Dachau, where people would be suspended with their arms overhead, and they would have the appearance that they were suffocating, and suffocation means restriction of the respiratory apparatus or interruption of respiration, or asphyxiation means deprivation of oxygen. And so they would appear to not be able to breathe and then die in about 3 hours. And so he knew about that. And then he looked at the arms of the Shroud of Turin and saw that the bloodstains bifurcate. And he put that together in kind of what I would call an a priori conclusion that Jesus was changing positions on the cross, trying to pull himself up in order to take a breath.
So wait a minute. I've never heard this. That's amazing. So looking at the Shroud of Turin, which we cannot say for sure is the burial shroud of Jesus, although I'm inclined to think that it is. But looking at that was what put it in his mind that Jesus would have been struggling for breath.
Well, he felt it was supportive. And so because it had been known, actually suffocation had been proposed earlier by a French surgeon, Lebec, and a Hungarian surgeon, Hynek, in the 1920s. They had become aware of this kind of torture. Dr. Barbet was also aware, and then he kind of agreed with that, and he thought, hey, you know, look at the shroud arms. It kind of all fits together, and then if you go and break the legs, then they really can't push themselves up. And so he put that together to conclude that suffocation was the cause of death.
Now, when they broke the legs of the other two victims of crucifixion, it does seem to add to that idea that they could no longer pull themselves up. And that what is your conclusion now? Did they die from suffocation, or do you think that they died from something else?
Well, I think breaking the legs was just additional torture. And when you fracture a long bone, other things can occur, such as globules of fat can enter the blood circulation. And if those go to the lung or to the heart, it can cause a rapid death also. But again, you have to – the crucifixion and the suspension torture that was used at Dachau, and I talk about that in the book, they're not comparable. And at Dachau, they would put people's arms above their heads. They put weights on their feet. And it was an agonizing torture. And if they left them in that condition for about 3 hours, they would asphyxiate and die. And so that's really very different from crucifixion, where people are on the cross for days. And Jesus himself was having a conversation with the other two felons that were being crucified the same day with him.
Right.
And if you read the description of suffocation, with Entbinden or the suspension torture that the Nazis used, you would not be able to talk at all. You'd be really struggling just to stay alive.
It seems like you thought this through.
I've been studying this about 10 years.
I mean, it's just amazing how many details there are when you really look at it, as you've done. Little details. I mean, the fact that they're talking, they're having a conversation, does argue for the fact that they're not struggling for breath, certainly not at that point.
And there have been reconstruction or experiments, so to say. Dr. Zugabe, for example, put his son up on a cross and monitored blood gases, monitored their vital signs. And being suspended on the cross, it was uncomfortable for a young, healthy person, but their oxygenation didn't decline. They did not have difficulty breathing. And interestingly, they were not able to pull themselves up when they were suspended on a cross. Now, this is a reconstruction experiment, of course, but you understand these are young, healthy young people, his kid.
But he didn't nail his kid to a cross.
No, he did not, but he suspended him and asked them to try to pull themselves up. And if you think about it, the primary flexor of the arm is the biceps muscle. And physiologically speaking, if you elongate the muscle, you do two things. You put it at a mechanical disadvantage, and then the fibrils that interact and contract against each other are stretched out as far as they can be. So you could not have a less advantageous posture for the muscle to be able to contract the arm.
Hold that thought. We're going to be right back talking about the crucifixion of Jesus.
Alvin, I would like to talk about Relief Factor.
Sure, yeah.
But you know what? Even better than my talking about it, what about if we hear from Julia? Can we hear from Julia?
Yeah.
Is she here? Let's go.
I had pain in my hands that kept me from work and doing projects around the home. I heard about Relief Factor on the radio and began taking it, and it left me with pain-free hands again. I was able to do the things around the house that I enjoy doing. I'm so glad I found Relief Factor.
Okay, I got to say, Relief Factor was actually created by doctors who wanted a 100% drug-free supplement that could help your own body deal with inflammation and those aches and pains due to aging, exercise, whatever it is, which is why I take it. Look, you can do all kinds of stuff, but this is—it's very inexpensive. It's drug-free. It's safe, and within 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you. It works for most people, so check it out. It's ReliefFactor.com. Highly recommended, folks. ReliefFactor.com.
Restricting free speech is restricting truth. The far left has crossed a line, silencing conservatives across America. Shadow banning on Twitter, Facebook, blocked ads on YouTube, restricted searches on Google, Prager University. Why isn't it fully available everywhere? All of these are direct attacks on our First Amendment rights. It's time for conservative America to wake up. You have a choice. You can fight back with veteran-led PatriotMobile.com, America's only conservative cell phone company. Every phone call protects your constitutional rights. Every bill that you pay fights for your freedom. Get the same reliable nationwide coverage you already have and know that your hard-earned money is supporting conservative organizations like the Heritage Foundation, PragerU, and Alliance Defending Freedom. With plans starting as low as $25 a month, why wait? Call 1-800-A-PATRIOT. Use the word Hugh or visit patriotmobile.com/Hugh to waive your activation fee. We will not be silent. Join me and thousands of Americans. Switch to Patriot Mobile today and let freedom ring.
It's Better Together, the exciting daily half-hour talk show by women and for women in all seasons of life. Coming to TBN weekdays starting April 22nd. Each day, host Lori Crouch welcomes popular women in ministry, music, entertainment, and more. It's good friends like Christine Kane, Carrie Jobe, Victoria Osteen, Lisa Harper, Dee Dee Freeman, Holly Wagner, and many more. So grab a cup of coffee, settle back in your favorite easy chair, and join Lori and friends as they sit down for fun, faith, and some powerful conversations about relevant issues all women talk about. Relationships, addiction, identity, no topic is off limits. Better Together is real friends getting together for real conversations. It's more than just a TV show. It's your daily destination for love, friendship, encouragement, and community. It's Better Together, starting Monday, April 22nd at 1:30 Eastern, 10:30 Pacific, only on TBN. Text TOGETHER to 316-316 to join in. That's TOGETHER to 316-316. And we'll see you real soon.
Many people today think the Bible, the most influential book in world history, is not only outdated, but also irrelevant, irrational, and even immoral. Dennis Prager here. I've written a book, The Rational Bible, Genesis, to prove otherwise. My new book demonstrates clearly and powerfully that the Bible remains profoundly relevant both for the great issues of our day and in each of our lives. The Rational Bible Genesis comes out this May, and I want to invite you to join me for an exclusive pre-launch event for my book on May 6th in Orlando, Florida. That will be the first day it will be available to the public. Get your tickets today. Be part of a full-day celebration with me and our partners at TBN. Come and be part of the studio audience for the taping and live broadcast of my radio show. After the broadcast, I'll discuss my new book, answer your questions, and you'll get a signed copy of The Rational Bible Genesis. Join me in Orlando on May 6th. Get your tickets today when you visit my website, DennisPrager.com, and click on the Rational Bible banner. See you in Orlando.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring.
Hey there, folks. I'm talking to Dr. Joseph Bergeron about his new book, The Crucifixion of Jesus, A Medical Doctor Examines the Death and Resurrection of Christ. Fascinating stuff. Really fascinating. You were just describing the idea of how one, if one were to be crucified, would attempt to pull oneself up by one's arms. And you're saying that it doesn't make sense that that's what they would have been doing.
Well, the biceps muscle is the primary flexor of the arm, and it would be placed at its most disadvantageous position if it's elongated, both mechanically and both by the muscle fibrils that interact on a chemical level to contract.
Excuse me, but I've always heard that people would have struggled for breath by pushing up with their legs.
Well, the idea is, again, going back to the suspension torture, and what they observed with that was that they were struggling to breathe. And so if you try to extrapolate that to a crucifixion, then you'll think, well, gosh, they've got to pull themselves up or push themselves up or something. But again, they're not analogous, really. They're unlike. Crucifixion is unlike suspension torture in a way that I don't think they're comparable. And again, crucifixion could last for days. So if you're suffocating, you're not going to last for a week, and you're not going to carry on a conversation.
I guess to play devil's advocate, I'm just curious because I think that most people have suggested to me that the reason the legs were broken on the other victims was so that they could no longer push themselves up. In other words, that you would have pushed yourself up with your legs to get a breath. And that once you were unable to do that, you would suffocate. Is that possible? I mean, maybe you're. What was that? If that's my wife, I'm not here. Is that possible that you would have pushed up with your legs?
I can't say it's not possible, except that. As I said, there have been reconstruction studies where young, healthy people were not able to do that. And to say that it's evidence for suffocation is an a priori assumption, because we can't really logically make that assumption. It doesn't follow.
Well, it's just interesting to me how these ideas get locked. You know, this book comes out in 1950 and 40,000 sermons or more preached on it, and next thing you know, everybody knows that that's what happened.
Well, it's easy to get your head around the idea, oh, yeah, I suffocated. You know, that's kind of easy for, you know, a layperson to understand. But when you think about it medically, it really doesn't make a lot of sense. And things don't often come to us in easy explanations. And when you look at shock, it becomes kind of difficult to unpack and really think about what was happening chemically and so forth.
What about the way that Jesus was nailed? You know, typically he's portrayed as being nailed through the palms of his hands, but then, you know, in recent decades, people have concluded that no, he probably was, the nails went through either the wrist or the early part of his forearm?
Well, Dr. Barbet actually did experiments on arms that he had amputated and put a nail through the palm and found that it would pull out with 100 pounds of force, and he didn't believe that that would be that would sustain someone on the cross. So he did an experiment where he, 10 times, I think, if I remember, where he put a nail through the wrist bones, and if you take your ring finger and bend it back as far as you can on your palm, onto the crease of the palm, if you drive a nail through that spot, it'll go through the wrist bones and not fracture the bones and create a stable fixation. So a nail placed in the hand or wrist at that point would be stable and hold a person on the cross. The other alternative would be to put the nail just above the wrist between the two, the radius.
Okay, and do we have other evidence for that? What does the Shroud of Turin depict?
The placement in the Shroud of Turin is difficult to ascertain, I think. I think it supports what I just described to you because that would place a nail that would go oblong through the hand and exit at the lower part or just above the wrist intersection.
Right.
And I think that's consistent with the Shroud of Turin. I've studied the Shroud of Turin, and it's a very interesting thing. I think that it's been studied extensively and has not been explained away. But I specifically stayed away from talking about that as evidence because right. I know it carries its own controversy.
Right.
I had to include some discussion of the Shroud when I discussed Dr. Barbet's hypothesis of suffocation.
Now, did Jesus – is there anything that Jesus ever said about his own death that figures into your thinking?
Well, yes, I think so. He said, you know, the Last Supper is a Passover Seder. And it's more likely than not, it's similar to what the Jews do today where they take four cups. And he took the cup of blessing or the cup of redemption, which speaks back to Exodus 6, where God said, with a long, strong arm, I'll redeem my people. He picks up this third cup, and he says something entirely unscripted. He said, this is the new covenant in my blood. that had to flabbergast everyone there, I'm sure. It's, what's he talking about? This is the new covenant in my blood. And he said, it's poured out for the remission of sins. So he was saying why he was dying. Because we're talking about Jesus. Why was he dying? He was dying to implement the new covenant that God foretold in Jeremiah 31, where he said, I'm going to make a new covenant that's not like the old covenant. It's going to be in the hearts of human beings are going to be transformed. And Jesus said, I am, you know, instituting the new covenant at my crucifixion. And then he said, my blood is poured out for the remission of sins. And as a doctor, when I read that, I thought, he told us his cause of death. He's bleeding to death.
His blood was poured out. That it's interesting because, you know, on a poetic level, that makes sense, right? We always talk about the blood of Jesus, and how we're drinking the blood and eating the flesh. And I guess just as I say, on a poetic level, the idea that he would have died of asphyxiation is a little confusing. Not that it's that matters over much, but it's just interesting in the larger case.
Well, again, it's easy to wrap your head around, oh yeah, he suffocated. That's kind of simple and easy to understand.
Right.
But when we really look at it from a medical standpoint, it's a little more complex than that.
We're going to be right back talking to Dr. Joseph Bergeron. The book is The Crucifixion of Jesus.
Guess what? Right now is the perfect time to tackle those home projects you've been putting off. So come summertime, you can just sit back and relax. HomeAdvisor can help get you started. HomeAdvisor matches you to the right pro for the job in seconds. You can read reviews and even book appointments online. HomeAdvisor can help with any home project, big or small, painting, plumbing, even remodeling. Find a great pro now before the busy season hits. Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app. HomeAdvisor.
I came as close to heaven as a person can be without getting in. For 3 years, I followed Jesus Christ and devoted myself to ministry. But today, Despite all that I did as a follower of Jesus, I am languishing in hell.
Don't miss Heaven So Near So Far, the story of Judas Iscariot.
Heaven So Near So Far, this Friday in the Eric Metaxas Show.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. The special counsel concludes there was no collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia, but the Mueller report also shows the president tried to stop the Russia investigation. White House correspondent Greg Cluxton reports.
The number one finding of the 448-page Mueller report is that the evidence was not sufficient to support criminal charges of Russia collusion. Yet the special counsel lays out in great detail repeated efforts by President Trump to seize control of the investigation. According to the report, the president made several attempts to fire Robert Mueller, and he wanted then-Attorney General Jeff Sessions to unrecuse himself from the Russia probe. Mueller's team also concluded that Mr. Trump's written answers to their questions were inadequate. Greg Clugston, The White House.
And a French official now says investigators believe an electrical short circuit most likely caused the Notre Dame Cathedral fire. This is SRN News.
Donald Trump is set to use gold to challenge the Federal Reserve. This action will drive the stock market higher and make gold prices soar. My name's Adam Baratta. I'm the co-owner of Advantage Gold and the author of the national best-selling book, Gold is a Better Way. For 47 years, the Fed has secretly valued gold at $42 an ounce. Trump is set to reveal their secret and force the Fed to properly value the gold on their balance sheet. I lay it all out in my most recent report, How Trump Will Trump the Fed. His executive action will ramp up the world economy and cause the price of gold to double overnight. To get my report, text the words Trump Gold to 49776. That's Trump Gold to 49776. Trump knows a higher gold price will unleash the U.S. economy. To get my report, get it right on your phone, right now, no questions asked. Text Trump Gold to 49776. That's Trump Gold to 49776. If you're an investor, you need to see this. Text Trump Gold to 49776.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way.
Hey, Johnny Nash obviously got a new prescription of glasses. Isn't that fantastic? I didn't even know that Johnny Nash wore glasses. Folks, we're talking about the crucifixion. A medical doctor examines the death and resurrection of Christ. I'm hearing a weird echo. I don't know what that is. Anyway, we just have a few minutes left in this hour. But Dr. Bergeron, this is so fascinating to me, and we'll have more time in our second hour together. But what surprised you most in studying this? Because, I mean, very few people who've ever lived have studied this the way you've done. In fact, no one has, because you're studying this at a time when we know things that previous people who've studied it couldn't have had access to.
As I mentioned earlier, I guess the first thing that surprised me was that there wasn't a consensus about what physicians thought about Jesus' cause of death. You hear, and as you said earlier, every Easter you hear a sermon about how Jesus suffocated, and you start thinking about that. Well, that really doesn't make sense. And then you hear about Jesus' heart ruptured from emotional agony. That was actually proposed by a physician in the 1840s. But there wasn't a lot known about cardiac disease in those days, and as we come forward in time, that kind of explanation has really fallen out of favor. And then, you know, the chest wound, some people say, well, you know, he died when they put the spear in his chest, and that's not an unreasonable thing, except that the Roman soldiers had already pronounced his death. And
right. He died. They said he's already dead, and let's prove it. Let's stick him with a spear. If he doesn't flinch, he's dead.
Well, you understand, Roman military discipline was harsh. If you nodded off when you were on watch, they were going to beat you to death. If you allowed a capital criminal to escape crucifixion, you would die yourself. So they were not going to release the remains of anybody without being very sure that he was dead. And so more likely than not, it was a coup de grace to make sure that the body was dead before they would release. And it wasn't common that bodies were released for burial, but a family could request that, and that was not, you know, out of the norm.
Well, I mean, this gets to the insane idea. I mean, I've read a lot about this, but just the absolute ridiculous idea that somehow Jesus was not killed, and that after, you know, he was taken down from the cross, he kind of woke up and ran off. It's so dumb when you know any of the details and what you're describing. I mean, it's almost funny, the idea that you could go through this and then, you know, they call it the swoon theory. And these very sloppy theories have been put out in the past, and people should be ashamed, I mean, because they're so bad. I mean, they really are. But there are people to this day who say, well, maybe this and maybe that. And I mean, I deal with that in some of my books. But you, when you look at it from a medical perspective, as you've done, it becomes even more impossible to believe.
Well, yes. I mean, as I said, if you allowed a capital criminal to escape crucifixion, you were going to be killed yourself. People have asked me, has anyone ever survived crucifixion? And there was one. And it's referenced by Josephus. Josephus was a Jew who defected to become a Roman, and he wrote his histories. And he was an eyewitness to the Jewish war from AD 66 to 74. And he happened to see, now the Romans crucified a lot of people during that war, sometimes hundreds. That Eusebius said there wasn't enough crosses for the people that were to be crucified. Not enough wood to make the crosses, what I think is what the quote says.
Hey, we just got a few seconds left. Go ahead.
So he saw three of his friends on the cross, and he got a stay of execution for them. They were taken down. Two died anyway. One of them survived. That's the only literary reference to anyone surviving crucifixion.
Unbelievable. Folks, if you want all this information and much more, The Crucifixion of Jesus is the book by Joseph Bergeron. Thanks for listening.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.